I'm rewinding your message, preparing it for playback.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
I hope you're having a great day. Welcome to Big Exclusives. I am Valerie Denise Jones, 929-477-1167. That number should be locked in your phone. If it isn't, the number again is 929-477-1167. All right, so guys, a few things before we get started. I wanted to say thank you to those of you who are part of our international audience. We appreciate you guys so much. Also, everybody who is on the board already, thank you, thank you. Most of you beat me here, so I appreciate your allegiance. I appreciate your loyalty. I can't say that enough. Another thing that I can't say enough is please, please, please be mindful of the fact that we do share this audio on other platforms. So if you know that your mic is live, please make sure that your audio, whatever your background level is, please make sure it's at a minimum. Sometimes you can't control it. I totally understand that. But if you can, just place yourself on mute so I do not have to. Outside of that, all I want you to do is sit back, relax, kick your feet up, right? Grab pen and paper so you can take some notes, and a refreshing non-alcoholic beverage, because today is going to be a good show. Now, we're going to do something that's a little different. We're going to do today's show in two parts because the story is too big. So the part two, which is more of an exclusive, we're going to reserve that for this thing that I'm working on for our members. All right, so I will get back to you on that regarding the part two. Today we're going to kind of focus on today's guest, music history, his relationship, his livelihood, what he's doing in the Bay Area, hip-hop music, and so forth and so on. Now, I don't expect you to remember any of this, so what I will do is I will play a few audio clips, and in doing so, it will explain somewhat of my insanity, some of my insanity. So, yeah, we're going to start here so that you'll know a little bit about today's guest and what to expect in the very near future. Soul Beat.
All right, what's up, man? It's Chuck Johnson. Man, what can I say, man? I'm just a jack of a lot of trades in this hip-hop culture. Been in love with it before I even got an opportunity to be getting into the business of it. At the end of the day, I've been a pioneer for hip-hop, just not for the Bay Area or Oakland, but really hip-hop. Interviewing artists, has that always been a dream of mine? Keep it real, it was like I didn't know what my role was like in hip-hop, but I just knew I had a place in it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know how to rap. I didn't know how to make a beat. But I did know that I had a real passion for it. I woke up to it every day. And then I think when I started learning to get into video production and broadcasting, that's when I started kind of figuring out my role in hip-hop, which was to be a host, which is to be like a producer of TV content, you know, possibly like manage artists. But my first love, I think, was when I found myself watching things like Yo MTV Raps, for example. I would see people like Fab Five Freddy, you know, command a dope conversation with any walk of hip-hop. Like, whether he was in Houston, whether he was in L.A., he was in New York, he just represented hip-hop. And I kind of saw that and said, that's what I want to be. Sobe was it was a hell of a ride because growing up in the neighborhood before I even got to Soul Beat, you know, we used to grow up watching it. And, you know, we had our little, you know, comments about it, but we always would watch it. And then, you know, like I said, I knew I had an interest in the game, but I just didn't know yet. But so I ended up going to junior college for a minute. And on a fluke, I ran into none other than Chuck Johnson, the actual owner. Now, back then it wasn't like resonating with me that we had the same last names, you know what I'm saying? And people was calling me Chuck. I just kind of looked at it and said, damn, there's Chuck Johnson, you know, the real infamous Chuck Johnson from Soul Beat. And so when I met him, it was just one of those things that he was like, hey, you know, here's my card. You know, if you want to think about doing an internship or something, come holler at me. And so I was like, okay, you know, I love this music shit. I love the ideal of getting into television for real. And so, you know, I called him up, and it was kind of rest was history.
All right, guys, so hopefully that made sense to you. Again, we're going to do the interview in two parts. The first is today, and then the other is an exclusive interview that our members will be privy to first, and then from there on we're going to play it during a future episode. So let's get started. What I'm going to do now is just play another audio clip for you, to kind of get your energy up, because that was, I know you were kind of in suspense there, you know what the hell I was talking about or what was going on. So, yeah, let's just go on and jump right into this interview, and I think this will be the best way to do that now that we have the guests on the line. So here we go, and then I'm going to bring in the host.
Yo, what's up? This is Chuck Johnson, and this is the Cassette Tape Chronicles, man. Up next, you're about to check a vibe with me and one of my player partners I've been knowing for a long time in this rap game. This dude goes by the sick-witted hog known as Be Legit. Check us out for a few minutes. Be on the lookout for some more interviews from the Cassette Tape Chronicles. I was about to tell you my top five Be Legit songs. I started off in my mind with Check It Out featuring Corrupt and E-40.
Check it out. Check it out.
It ain't a cell in this town that can hold me. And fuck the task force, cause some suckers tried to fold me, scold me, told me if I moved that they was blaster. Got me to the station, hella question.
Tell me about that experience. When did y'all do that? How that come together?
Wow, that's crazy. So anyway, I was working on my album when I at this time, you know, I'm pretty much stationed in LA, and you know, we doing shows and kicking it, and you know, Snoop had just got his new house and Death Row popping, Pac running around. It's them days, right? And so I was working on my album, and Corrupt them, and they came. Matter of fact, they came down here. They came down to the Bay.
Okay.
Matter of fact, Snoop came. He brought his Rolls Royce.
There you go.
Niggas stopped and tried to buy a pit bull in Oakland.
That's what it is.
You know what I'm saying? I think they did buy a pit bull in Oakland or some shit like that.
There you go. Came through.
Yeah.
Blended in.
Went to the studio and we did some songs, and that was one of them. Check it out. We came to party.
Yeah.
A couple of songs. We was fucking around, man. Just living.
All right, man. And again, these are some shits that, man, I'm telling you, these youngsters need to get up on, man. That's my whole thing, man. It's hella game and all our old music that some of them ain't really heard about. You know, they just gotta get up on it, man. One of my other ones, man, was Million Dollar Spock with you and Tupac and E-40. You know what I'm saying?
Money, nigga. Bust the cops in my $1 million spot. We got rocks, coke, and hops in my $1 million spot.
Give me all your motherfucking money, all money.
Yeah, that was on the Hall of Game. And,
yeah, the Hall of Game.
Hell yeah.
What did you drink?
All right, guys, you know that is about as far as I can go because I do not speak hip-hop, so I am going to turn it over to the expert. Yes. Welcome, Philo the Great.
Welcome back, Commander.
How are you doing today?
Indeed. I'm doing good. I was sitting back enjoying the clip, because I know you mentioned the top five Be Legit song, and we got the two, so I was hoping Ghetto Smile made one of them five, so I have a chance to ask him.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
let's
he's
go
lying.
On and bring in the guest. There he is.
Yeah.
All right, so I got you guys, and you're together, so that's good. Philo, your interview, is here. So, yeah, have fun. And I will catch you guys in a few minutes. I just want you guys to talk shop because, yeah, I can't. And you guys know that. So, welcome.
Oh, it's cool. It's cool. Right, right. So welcome, Chuck Johnson, to the show. Chuck, well, welcome, man. How you doing today, brother?
Oh, I'm good, man. Appreciate the opportunity, and life is good right now. What's going on with you guys?
Man, not much, brother. So, Valerie played the clip, and just like I was saying, brother, you mentioned your top five Be Legit songs when you was interviewing Be Legit, sitting down, chopping up game with Be Legit. And
right.
You mentioned two. So, did Ghetto Smile make the top five?
Shit, man. To be honest, it didn't make that particular top five, and it was like off the cusp when I was thinking about it. Like, I didn't sit back and really look at the man's discography. What I did was just kind of thought about the songs that immediately resonated in my soul, so to speak. But that's a dope song. We actually I've had times to talk to Be Legit about that song with I think it was Daryl Hall was singing on that one.
Right, from Hall & Oates, correct.
Yeah, with Daryl. Crazy enough, I went to a Hall & Oates concert last year, but that's just another thing. But this is definitely a dope song though with Be Legit.
All right, so we got you here, brother, and I just want to read a little bit about you. It say Charles Chuck Johnson wears a lot of hats. You wear them very well, but none of them fit you better than being the CEO of the Chuck Johnson Company, which is a full services media company that you founded in 1999. While creating an impressive clients list, including BET, Showtime, Spike TV, the NFL, San Francisco 49ers. Also, it says here that you have interviewed some of the greats, such as Queen Latifah, Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, Mr. Pimpin' himself, Too Short, Mr. Linguistic himself, E-40, and also here, the Fugees. So if you can, man, why don't you give us a background, give us your backstory for our listening audience out there.
Man, you know, it's all good. You know, I don't do this all the time, man, so it's kind of a dope experience because it's new and fresh. But just to go all the way back there, man, we're talking about the 90s, man, when hip-hop was just in a space where it was really starting to become a global phenomenon, and I was still basically in the space of being a fan, but I just, I just ate and slept shit. Like, I just, every facet of hip-hop, I was just already immersed in the culture growing up here in Oakland, California. But bottom line is in about 94, the end of 94, which is 25 years ago this year, which is crazy now, I got a chance to do an internship at a television channel, which is known as Soul Beat Television. It was a 24-hour black-owned independent network here in Oakland, California. And it was a unique twist because it was kind of had the local energy where, you know, they let the actual people that was the owners of a location, they would be the basically the stars of their own commercial. And so you just had this one-stop shop of having our own media platform while covering what was happening locally. And for me, bottom line is, being a hip-hop head, both worlds morphed that when I was there at that channel, the owner just gave me a chance to start doing hip-hop TV shows. And so kind of the rest was history. Through that first door opening, it just opened up so many other doors in my life that I was able to, you know, just make money doing media versus, you know, impact the, you know, community activism here in the Bay Area and many other things. So, yeah, man, it's just been a roller coaster ride, but the door opened with hosting a hip-hop video show.
And I was doing my research on you. I seen the video. I believe it was the Cassette Tape Chronicles, and I'll give you a minute to elaborate on that and what exactly what that is. But you was telling your story about your very first interview. You said Mr. Johnson himself called you into the office, as I recall. And when he called you into the office, he said, "We don't have a host. You are going to be the host. Now you need to go do your homework, research, and because it's on you, and get out my office," basically.
Straight up.
All right, so by it happening like that, then it said that your first interview, your very first interview, was what we now know as the Fugees, multi-platinum selling artist Lauryn Hill, Wyclef Jean, and believe the other member is Priest, so to say.
Prize Michelle.
Right, okay. Yeah. So that was your very first interview, correct?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that day was a great cold day because I did three interviews that day. And one of my first interviews was with the Fugees, man.
Wow. Now, when you interviewed the Fugees, did you know they would go on to be who they became, sell as many albums as they became, put in the work that they would end up putting in?
I mean, you know, who could have predict the score? You know what I'm saying? But who could predict the, you know, miseducation of Lauryn Hill? So the point was is that I knew back then that they were a talented group. I knew that the song that I was being asked to play on my video show wasn't something I was just doing just because I had to do it. Like, I thought the song was dope. You know what I'm saying? And keep it real, you know, Lauryn Hill had her energy and she was a pretty female, you know. So it was like I could see them, you know, being good. But to become, like I said, the Fugees, that was just not predicted.
Right. So, man, you didn't been around. You've been around for a minute. You started in the early 90s. You've been around, like you said, been a hip-hop head, didn't know where you wanted to be in hip-hop. You found yourself doing the interviews, the media. Who are some of the best interviews you would say that you have had? Some of the best guests, some of the best interviews you have done?
The best interviews, you know, to be honest, everyone had its own effect on me. Like, it was probably, like, life-changing because, keep it real, when I was doing my shows, it wasn't like it had some standards and structure that I had to go by. But for the most part, it was just me living it out. So every experience had a certain effect when I sat down and had conversations with these people. But keep it real, one of the most impactful ones I could definitely say was the LL Cool J interview. Probably because, you know, obviously I grew up listening to LL and, you know, having a certain appreciation for the East Coast music scene and even the culture out there. So it was always something like they was dope to me. But we also had our own identity over here in the West Coast. And so one day I just was hoping to get with those brothers in the East Coast and, you know, just kind of just do things a certain way of building a bridge between both coasts. Like, that was my thing. Like, I was a young dude who was, like, around the rap shit, but then I also was around hip-hop. So I had to do this dance between reality rap and maybe what you would call backpack lyrical content rap, hip-hop, I should say.
Right.
And right. I wanted to make sure that the West Coast had that certain dexterity, that it wasn't just a certain crop of people that it was out here. It was like every realm you can imagine, you could get it from the West Coast. And so it was, like, important for me at that time to have conversations with dudes from the South or even the East Coast to build that bridge. Because, again, this is at a time in the 90s, man, where everything was damn near still regional. Like, the things that's, like, normal for the youngsters, the millennials that they you know, got and they can appreciate today, that shit went like that in the early 90s. So, bottom line was the conversation with LL was definitely dope. you know, it's different times that I've had good conversations with people like the Goody Mob, where that was important
right.
because they came out with a dope album like Soul Food, and they was a new group who really maybe didn't know exactly how much impact they had over here in the East on the West Coast. And so here in Oakland, like, I was literally playing that shit every day in my car, like it was just the hottest thing. And then other people around here was too. So when they came out here, it was like, so y'all really like our shit? And I was like, what, are you tripping? Like, I actually knocked it all week, you know what I'm saying? So, again, just being a part of the fabric of helping hip-hop tell its own story, you know, I can't really keep it 100. I probably interviewed 100 people, you know what I'm saying? Who knows, you know? So,
right.
like, again, I can't really even give you a full list, man. It's just been a crazy ride.
All right. So, let the people know, man, I mentioned some of your work that you're responsible for, the Cassette Tape Chronicles. Let our listeners know, mm-hmm. man, what the Cassette Tape Chronicles is, man, and you know, the aim behind the Cassette Tape Chronicles and what you're doing with that.
Well, you know, I'm gonna take a dance and show them that I know how to do, I guess you can say, multitasking and content development. So this piece that I want to do, which is Cassette Tape Chronicles, is basically going to be a bridge between, again, the millennials and, I guess you can say, the old school culture of hip hop. You know, I believe that, you know, I have a true love for the history of this shit, but I also understand the future is here too. And so I wanted to have a platform where the youngsters can definitely be a part of it. But at some time, you know, the ones that have the interest, I want y'all to learn about what you came from and what some of the, you know, jewels maybe you could utilize from the old school and bring it into now. And then the old school needs to learn what's the game today from them, the youngsters. And so, you know, that's what Cassette Tapes Chronicles is all about. And so what I wanted to do is just kind of do some storytelling with about maybe 5 of my old school episodes, which is, I believe, the artists that I think will resonate with this current day. And 5 of the interviews that I'm going to show is from my old school TV show that used to be on Soul Beat Television. It was known as The Rap mm-hmm. Show with Chuck. It would go on Soul Beat Television on Saturdays from 4 to 6 p.m., and I would take live phone calls, I would interview people, and I would play, you know, I guess you can say the dopest music that I could find in the video library I could find. And so
mm-hmm.
the artist that I think I got some footage still a part of is with Jay-Z. You know,
mm-hmm.
I got a chance to interview him, LL Cool J, Mac-10 and Dub C from the West Coast, Goody
mm-hmm.
Mob from Atlanta, and then I think it's Chino XL is in there from New Jersey. I think it's actually his brother named Havoc that's actually from L.A. that was on Warner Brothers Music at one time. I think I got some footage
mm-hmm.
with him. So it's just different artists that I've been able to interview from back in the day. I want to just show you guys that. I got a lot of videos that people would love to see, to be honest. I can't find them on YouTube, but I got them. And so it's just going to be a cool, nice way to do a time chamber travel, you know what I mean? And just show
right.
basically where we came from. And then, you know, they're going to wake up and see where I'm at currently, too, as well, with the hip-hop culture.
All right. So this leads me to want to ask you this. Like, I remember back in the day, there were posters. You would show up with your favorite artist to the autograph to get
right.
the poster signed. It was street teams back then. It was people going around that wasn't even an artist, but working on the artist's behalf in different cities, right? So you had
right.
these things going on. You had a lot of people selling albums at the corner store, out the trunk, anywhere they
Straight
could.
Up.
They had their CD with them selling it. All right, so that was from the old school. Well, what would you say is the main difference? Like, because you came from that era, and then, like you say, you relate, or now you know you're not, so to say, shunning off the change that's here now. So being that part of the game is not there, do you think old is new and that part of the game is missing? Or do you think there's just a new age way of doing that?
Well, first of all, what I'm always do, even when I'm 80 or whatever, I always check back with what was happening before me, and I ain't mad at listening to what's coming before after me. You know what I'm saying? Like, the youngsters know what's up, what they doing. You know what I'm saying? And we learn from what we learned from what we did. And, you know, again, I learned from the OGs around me over here. You know, before I got into the game, I respected the OGs. I didn't just ignore them. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I feel right. like. Youngsters don't realize they're going to get old, too. And so one thing I do, you know, that's different is that social media is king. You know what I'm saying? The content is shifted. You know what I'm saying? And in some ways, you know, I ain't no old grumpy dude saying, oh, I'm mad that y'all changed. It's like it moved. It changed. It's different. Now, if you want to be a part of it, you got to adapt straight up. You know what I'm saying? You can't just keep saying go back to what it was. It's what it is. And however you can play your position or whatever way you can affect the position. You know, and that's just kind of where I'm at. I'm saying I'm unapologetically old school. But if you sit down with me or if you pay attention to our movement, you're going to know that I'm very much here in at the pulse of the culture right now. We're at the state of the culture right now. And I'm also OG and respectful enough that if I got a young squad of people that's saying, hey, man, you know, you respect us, we respect you, we can build. You know, I'm with that type of shit. Because, again, I'm not detached in no type of way, I believe. I just don't like sometimes how the younger culture feel like, all right, we doing this shit now. Like, case an example, keep it real, like that piece that I think is Offset. And don't get me twisted, I rock with the Migos. I listen to their music. I went to their concert with the Drake, you know. Shout out to my own girl, Nina, over at Live Nation. But the point is, he said a statement recently on some radio show, like he was saying something like, you know, the OGs need to, you know, kiss our feet or some shit. And I was like, what part of the game is that? It should be the reverse. And so, you know, back to really your question, it's certain things that I think that they can keep, you know, in the game from where we started from. Like, again, the street team element is gone. I missed that part, to be honest, because that's when you really had a time where you had a lot of people in the streets and kicking it and vibing. It wasn't about the violence. It wasn't about shortchanging the culture from being seen. Now it's like, you know, you're getting fines if you put up them posters and try to run off. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's a different time of life that you can't just do the street team energy no more. But, you know, it's what it is. Social media is king right now. You gotta adapt.
Indeed. Man, so you mentioned Offset, all right? You mentioned that. I agree with you. I think the day of paying homage, the respect is gone. It's gone. It's a lot of younger artists now that are popping, that are successful, who really don't pay homage or see it as the ones before you actually made a way for you to be doing what you're doing today. If it wasn't for Luke, if it wasn't for Uncle Luke, I don't think nobody would be rapping or doing the type of rap that we like or we accustomed to. Reason being, the reason why I say that is because Uncle Luke took it to court, all the way to the Supreme Court, to be able to say what we want to on albums. And that's where the explicit warning came from. It's from the Uncle Luke case,
right?
Where now you can say whatever
Straight
you
up.
Want to, but it has to have that advisory explicit label on it, right? So
right.
anybody such as Offset making them type of comments, man, you totally foul. That's totally disrespectful. And if you do the history, really, folks need to pay more homage to Uncle Luke for sticking in there like a G and fighting that case all the way to the fullest, like he said, with his own money. You know what I mean? To be able
pioneer.
To say
pioneer
that he
for
want
that.
To, for real, and salute to Uncle Luke and to be able to say what we want to on these records. So I say that because that was a total foul statement. And really, not just to hip-hop and the OGs of hip-hop, that was a foul statement to a man, period, because should no other man expect another man to bow down to him and kiss and come on, man. That's just on something totally different, bro. And you know,
yeah.
With that type
but
of
you
thing,
know, like
man,
I said, man, shout out to, you know, Austin. It ain't about a certain kind of, you know, just scolding you. It's just more of, you know, one of his OGs need to pull up on him and have a dope conversation with him about, you know, just building from that level, man, because that's
right.
Where you get to start, where that bridge get communication begins. I had to really take time to notice my nephews, for example, they're going to talk to me about shit a certain way until we get to know each other, and then it's like now it's how we do together, not how we was before when it wasn't us together. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And so, you know, I say that, and hopefully, you know, just make it the offset, and it's not to scold you,
yeah,
but it's just to give you some game. You know what I'm saying? Just to give you some game on what is, you know, but that's it. That's it. But look, brother, the cassette tape chronicles, man, you got that back popping. Like you said, your whole aim with the cassette tape chronicles is to bridge the gap between the old school people like us, myself, who grew up on NWA, Ghetto Boys, Scarface, B-Legit, E-40, Mac Dre, you know what I'm saying, Mac 10, Mac Maul, you know, that whole movement out there. I even got to throw MC Hammer in the mix, because during that time,
okay,
MC Hammer sold a whole hell of a lot of records. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, okay.
Right, so you bridging the gap now, like you say, with the millennials, which was known as the millennials, with the cassette tape chronicles, who would you say some of the millennials you rocking with, though? Who you feeling right now?
I mean, you know, it's a different vibe for different times. I'll start with that. I mean, on the real, you know, I've been rocking with Future a lot in the last couple of years. I just like his energy. And it's a twist that, for me, for example, I ain't popping no perks. You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm not even going to live his life, but I can take the pieces out of his music for what I like it for. You know, some of his honesty. You know what I'm saying? Versus, you know,
mm-hmm,
I rock with the Meek Mills. You know, unfortunately, I'm going to say their names together, but shout out to Filthy Rich and Mozzie. They out here in the Bay, you know, and also in Sac doing good music, but right now they ain't the best of friends, but, you know, I hope that changes. But I want to shout out both of them music. You know, it's just a lot of different dope artists in our region that's making noise. Still named Jake Stylin. It's, you know, Nesta Pharaoh out here. You know, shout out to the town's own All Black. All Black doing big business with G-Eazy. And so, you know, we got a lot of talent out here, man. And, you know, I shout out to my guy Nipsey motherfucking Hustle. You know, that was one of my top dogs in the last 5 years, you know what I'm saying? He's literally in my top five the last 5 years for sure. So Nipsey Hussle on my mind right now. YG, you know, I rock with all this shit, man. It's certain times I got my mood music, and then it's the times I'm looking for some lyricism.
So right now with the music, like you say, we living in a new wave of music. It is a new wave. You just named some of the people you rocking with, and shout out to the Bay Area, all those Bay Area artists that was just named. So what are you doing right now, brother? Chuck, what are you doing as of right now in the hip hop with these artists, in the community? Well, what are you doing right now?
I mean, my keep it real, if you was out here in the Bay Area, you know, five different people may give you five different stories, because I just have spread my tentacles in different ways in this culture. But one of my things that I've actually been tapping into, if we can get into this a little bit, is the e-gaming culture. I got a gaming company with my partners, my business partner, his name is Brad Fuwellen, also Carmen Pop, and also Josh Johnson. He actually played for the NFL team, the Washington Redskins last year, the quarterback. He's also tied in. But we basically created a concept where, you know, we do e-gaming tournaments. We basically add athletes with entertainers with professional gamers. and we do, you know, tournaments once a month. We actually just created now here in Oakland a video game lounge. It's going to be at the Halftime Sports Bar. If you're ever here in Oakland, California, come to the Halftime Sports Bar. And we're going to have this lounge where, you know, you got seven different TVs up in there, you know, for gaming. You know, if you down with the Madden, that's where we started from, Madden, and also basketball, the Call of Duties or whatever. Because, like, you know, keep it real with you, man. Just throw it back to that old school. You know, what, the games we started off with was Tecmo Bowl. You know,
right,
games we started off with was double
right.
Dribble. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And
I
just realized that me and my homies, we keep it real. We come together, smoke some, have a drink, vibe. And I just said, you know what? How can I make this a machine? You know, how can I really make this an experience that carries beyond our living room, and now it's just a part of the culture?
That's dope. At the Double Dribble, it turned us out when we got NBA Live. That was NBA Live. NBA Live came behind Double Dribble, man. And folks know, man, the Tecmo Bowl, all that started on Nintendo. You know what I'm saying? Went from Nintendo to whatever game system you got a chance to get, but that's real talk, man. So now the gaming has evolved, technology has evolved, because when we was coming up, there was no playing against somebody online. If they weren't in the room, you weren't playing against them, period. Period. So now to see where it is now, to see where you all have taken it, like you said, you all have taken it from the living room, like with technology, it's gone from the living room, being able to be in the comfort of your own home, playing with somebody in the comfort of their own home. But not only that, now it's taking it to the next level by taking it to the sports bar. I believe you said it's what, High Time Sports
Bar?
Yep,
it's Halftime Sports Bar, here in Oakland, California, man. It's off of 14th Street. But, it's just been a unique project because, growing up, I used to participate in some of them tournaments. And now to be actually putting them on and having this dope experience with these athletes and these pro players, because keep it real, you know, you would think the pro player has a higher IQ and he'll just kick somebody ass, right? But then some of these pro gamers is crazy good on winning, you know, whatever, $100,000 a month off of just playing video games and winning tournaments. So it's just been a dope learning lesson and learning curve of how, you know, to develop an e-gaming company, man, especially out here in the Bay Area, where, you know, Silicon Valley is. So we just getting different experiences, man. We got a chance to go to, you know, EA Sports campus. You know, meet some people here, get them familiar with our brand. So, you know, we'll see. And, you know, shout out to all the influencers that's been down with us, the, you know, Marshawn Lynch's of the world, to, like I said, the Nestor Pharaohs, my man, my man Nick Young used to play for the Warriors. He down with
Swaggy. Swaggy
different
P,
people.
Right?
That's
Swaggy
P. Swaggy P. Shout out Swaggy P. He down with us. So, it's just a dope vibe, you know what I'm saying? You get to not only, you know, watch good pro ball players play the game and compete, you also got the average Joe that now they get a chance to win money. So, for example, June 1st, we actually have a tournament going on for a grand prize of $5,000, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if you go to uglworld.com or if you go to our Instagram at uglworld, you'll get a chance to, you know, enter the project and potentially win $5,000.
Right. That's dope. That's dope. Man, I wanted to piggyback on something too, man, about you made a statement that you would think that the professional athletes would just blow the gamers out the water because they actually out there playing ball. But some of the best coaches, man, did not play ball. Some of your best basketball coaches did not play basketball. Some of your best football coaches did not physically actually play the sport, but they became great coaches. So I know competition is competition, especially when you're a gamer like that. You know, they consider gamers when you all you do is play the game. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're a gamer. And to see people actually making a living off of it is dope. And to give them the opportunity to play against the professionals, to put their talent against the professionals' talent is also dope. And then to actually be plan for Summer and Incentive, which is five bands come June 1st. Are you all playing at the sports bar at halftime right there? Is it, you said it's on 14th. Is it on 14th and Broadway?
Yeah.
14th and what in Oakland?
No, it's three. If I'm not mistaken, it's 314 14th Street. 314 14th Street. And it's
okay.
Basically near Lake Merritt here in Oakland. You'll be able to find it if you Google Halftime Sports Bar, or even if you go to our Instagram, we'll get all the information you need. And then, again, because it's such a big tournament for 5,000, we're going to have over 200 people competing. Even your audience in Nashville or even in Jacksonville or wherever, they can go online and compete during our online game tournaments. And then, obviously, if you get down to the last 16, well, you have to fly to Oakland, man, to get your 5,000. So,
right.
Again,
so
you know, go to UVOWorld.com.
So, basically, the Sweet 16 will be done in person. So I just want to make sure for our listeners, it's going to be over 200 people in it where people will play online against each other in this tournament. But if you make it to the Sweet 16, then you will have to fly to Oakland to compete live, face-to-face.
Yes, sir.
With the person,
yes, sir,
that you line up with to have a chance to walk away with five bands, courtesy of your skills. So if you don't got the skills, hey, then, hey, you know what it is. So good luck, each and all, everybody. Bro, we're going to help you promote it here to anybody who wants to play. And you did say it's different games, correct? From Madden to basketball? What y'all playing, 2K? NBA 2K?
So what's happening with this particular – for this particular tournament, we're doing John Madden football. You know, we're gonna bring another one for NBA 2K soon as well. But for this one, is for Madden. And also, just for your listeners, man, it's a $75 buy-in. You know what I'm saying? But if you do your thing, man, you can win $5,000. And also, don't forget that second prize and third prize will get a cash prize as well.
Okay. So let me ask you this, man, with the game, I know you throw in the tournaments. Is the music involved with the tournaments anyway? Are you all playing people's music during the tournament? Are people allowed to submit music to get their music heard by some of the people who may be attending and playing in the tournament?
Right. So, again, one of our unique experiences is that we have that in-person experience, but then we also content developers as well. If you go to our website or our Instagram, you'll see profiles on the actual gamers that's getting involved with this. And like I said, for example, I think he cool with me throwing his name out there with the young homie Neftefero. Shout out Sick Witty Records and everything. He really dope in the game. And for example, one of our influencers, if you want to call him that, is Los Angeles Rams Marcus Peters. He's also down with us, and so they talk shit behind the curtain with each other just to get the game going, so that eventually they're gonna play against each other. For some big stakes and just a different kind of fun experience when you're watching, your favorite rapper going against your favorite athlete.
Right, right. Dope. So, would it be opportunities for music to be played amongst the rappers who be there, for people who not gamers, but can they submit music to you so you can play music?
No doubt. They definitely can submit music there because, we be having our DJs there rocking music, and, if the artist, decides to do it, they'll drop a performance for us while they're there. You know what I'm saying? Because, again, man,
right,
the difference with the Ultimate Gaming League with us is that, your average tournaments, they're not exactly that exciting. You know what I'm saying? They're kind of boring, But with our thing is, we got pretty young ladies that like to come watch us play video games. Because guess what? They see they're making money. And on top of that, some of these girls will kick your ass in the game if you don't watch it. I've had some homegirls that really know how to play. And, and then again, we got that music vibe to it. So it's not just your typical room when it comes to those kind of tournaments. So you just got to come check us out. Check the experience out. UGLworld.com.
Okay. So you just gave the website. Go ahead and get an Instagram too. Go ahead and give all your contact information.
Oh yeah,
at this time.
Yeah, the same handle. Yep, the same handle at UGL World. UGL World. You know what I mean? And I appreciate today vibing with y'all, and I definitely want to keep it up, man. You know.
Hey, no doubt, bro. We gonna link. The interview is not over. But we gonna link.
It's
bro.
All good.
We gonna link for sure. Right now, what I want to do though, I want to bring Valerie back in, and give Valerie an opportunity to ask you any questions. She's been listening to us wrap it up. Listen to us talk, and she may have something that she wants to add. Any question that she may want to ask you, because I know she will be doing an exclusive interview with you, my brother. But we can break down more who you are extensively, and really fine tooth comb and get the get who you are really out, and that'll be done at a later date. But Valerie, why don't you come to the line, and I'm gonna toss it to you at this time to see if you have anything that you would like to discuss with Mr. Johnson while we got him here. You got it. Let's get it.
Yes, thank you, Philo, for that. You did an impeccable job, because that was one of the things that I was definitely going to mention, because I didn't realize how big of a deal the gaming industry is. You guys know I love to Google. You do not know that about me, Mr. Johnson, but our listening audience does. And I actually Googled it because I thought I was doing myself a service by adding an e-gaming commercial, but then quickly I got confused because I was like, wait a minute, I just typed in e-gaming and all I see is e-sports. So I learned something today, but before I do that, I just want to go back and reiterate what's on your flyer. Madden 2019 5000 Madden Tournament registration begins April 8th. Okay, so that's Tassa, right? So all ages sign up at UGL, as in LarryWorld.com. Current NFL teams, PS4 online bracket plus in-person championship. 75 buys in, prizes for all players. Top three get paid. Now, I want to bear with me, okay? I let people know I love my snippets, all right? I'm going to play something to get us in the mood, all right? I'm going to play something to get us in the mood. Yeah, because Philip already touched on it, so I appreciate that so much. I also appreciate Jeff Kwan, for this intro. Man, dude is working so hard behind the scenes. I appreciate that. BTP Media, big ups to you. I'll make sure that we get some intro out before the end of the show. But, so listen, Mr. Johnson, I want you to help walk me through this. I'm going to play it, I'm going to read something, and then I'm going to talk to you, all right? Here we go.
This is kind of crazy.
The esports has gone up like a rocket. Boom, straight up. And the money that's coming in now is insane.
Six-figure salary, in the spotlight, on stage, and some of them are just wholly unprepared.
This chair is $1,600.
$1,600
for this chair.
I'm living a dream for a lot of people, but yeah, sometimes it sucks because of all these drawbacks.
So there's this badge of honor in esports that I grind. I play hour upon hour upon hour upon hour. I put in, if I grind more, I'm going to get better.
If I play for too long, I'll get pain at the end of the day.
Too long meaning how many hours?
Like 8 hours.
If he can be successful playing video games, wanted to pursue this, I would be very supportive of him.
Got him, honey. Gotta have more confidence.
Everyone knows there's burnout in this.
Depression, anxiety. There's a lot of pressure to do that kind of extra work. I love this industry, but somebody has to talk about what's wrong with it.
Now, I actually want to stop it right there, because from that point, they get into this guy's life. They talk about his fan base, and how much allegiance they have to them, their rigorous schedule. I mean, tell us What is the difference between when people say e-gaming versus e-sports? Just make that clear before I start reading these stats that was printed in Forbes magazine.
I mean, e-gaming is just, you know, you're playing online, you know, and the sport is just like almost like you're going into like a league.
All right. And just for you guys, e-sports, as it relates to the market growth, because I'm all about the coins, right? So the industry itself has grown from a $493 million industry last year to over $700 million. Estimated revenue this year, 2019, is over $900 million. I mean, like, that is insane. They mentioned, you know, if you commit to it, it's possible you can end up with a six-figure salary. The money is, like, insane. I knew it was a really, really big deal. We just had a recent incident in Jacksonville where a guy lost and then ended up shooting some people because, like the guy was about to introduce, you know, there is a downside. But there's a downside, you know, to everything because there's always some sore loser, you know what I'm saying, especially when money is involved. Emotions and all that stuff will be tied to it. But so why do you love it so much?
Well, you know, when I used the word sure just now, it was because I remember that, you know, because we actually had one of our particular pro gamers, shout out to Bam. We call him Bam. His name is Bam on the game. But he's from Oakland, and he actually flew out there to do that. And so he was there. But, you know, we just pride our brand with having the ability to kind of make people kind of feel like a community together. And it's just like a code of conduct we just ask everybody to maintain because, you know, like you said, it's different walks of life, it's different, you know, money brackets, it's different races in this room, and we all just want to be, you know, civil and make this thing a consistent, fun thing for everybody. So I think as long as we keep that bar at that level, I think our particular brand is going to be able to accomplish the things we want to do in e-gaming. Because, again, e-gaming is like, it's basically just the technology abilities to bring all these different worlds together is what we living in this day and time. And so now that's why, you know, the video games that we used to play back in the day, you had to hook up with your buddies and y'all may be five or six deep in one room. But now because of technology, you know, you can play somebody in Russia. And so I think that's why you're seeing, I guess you can say, a spike in revenue because, again, it's just not a local thing. It's a world thing.
Mm-hmm. And I just, again, I looked it up because you gave a beautiful rendition of what it meant. And I like to just Google stuff, as I mentioned earlier. The term esports refers to organized competitive gaming among professional players. Although there are many games that can be included in the space, the most popular games are generally team-based multiplayer games from the first-person shooter or multiplayer online battle arena genre. The audience can watch the event by either visiting the arena live or online through gaming broadcasters. And ways that they generate revenue, in case you're interested, sponsorship, advertising, media rights, gaming, publisher fees, tickets, and merchandise. Are you into the merchandise, that aspect of it yet?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We actually we got a cut and sew person that we're working with right now to think about that, and we'll go from there, man. You know, it's just we're getting really started. We only been doing this thing maybe for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just our plan is very broad, you know. So it's like almost like merchandise is mandatory, so to speak.
Right. And I can almost sense your energy. You really, really came alive when you started talking about that. Not that you don't love hip-hop. I'm just saying I really felt your energy elevate. So when you're in this and you're doing a great job, these are the tough questions that I personally want to know. Being that you're African-American, and I saw that, like, the sponsors are, like, Red Bull, a lot of those, and I know that there are probably other people who just like you who enter it and they're looking to make a whole bunch of money. Do you see that there's any like favoritism as it relates to race, or is it pretty equal across the board? Because the players, much like, I guess I can't compare it to NFL because all of the NFL owners are white, so that would be a bad analogy. But I mean, is it pretty fair across the board, or is it tough being an African American entering that arena?
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're still in America where racism exists. But I think here in this particular realm of business, also being here in Silicon Valley, being right down the street, I think it's just a small number of African Americans who actually have an interest in learning this game or this industry, you know. Sometimes it might be, you know, lack of opportunity, but I think we're at a day and age where things like coding, for example, I've been learning about coding for maybe the last 10 years, not myself actively in it, but I know that it's the, you know, main intricate piece to, you know, developing these games. And now, and I think these, you know, millennials, they actually have an interest in learning coding. So, you know, I think the future is going to be bright. It's just right now it is kind of scarce when it comes to the you know, African-Americans in this field right now.
Right. And I kind of want to stay in the spirit of millennials because we always use our shows, Philippa and I, we always try to make sure that our young audience definitely gets something from this, whether it's entertainment, you know, an education, inspiration, what have you. But so I want to slowly move the needle to talk about, like, media, you know what I mean? Overall media. What do you think that when you think of media right now, like what are the first like maybe three words that come to mind before I start asking you questions about social media?
Media, I think media, again, the evolution has already has changed. It's now the digital divide is, you know, between the internet and regular television. It's no longer a separation no more. It's just they're kind of together. But I think, you know, traditional media still has a certain place for those people that like to sit at home and kind of take it in versus, you know, we in a day and a time where people pretty much just they got their phone and that's all they need. You know what I'm saying? And maybe their laptop. And so, again, you just have to be able to affect the culture in certain ways in both worlds. You just have to adapt. You have to learn how to utilize both for what they worth. You know what I'm saying? But keep it real, it's a largest percentage starting to lean towards these phones and this laptop. So it's just you have to adapt to how to attract them from that space. And I'm still learning this stuff, to keep it real. I'm not just the most savvy, but I think I do have a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you definitely have to have a plan, very, very strategic plan. Philip and I have these conversations all the time about how, you know, it's really hard to determine the algorithm of social media and or how to effectively use media, particularly how do you navigate urban media. Do you know what I mean? Like it's sometimes the lines get a little blurred because of expectations from our niche markets and stuff. So I totally understand as it relates to that. And also, I just want to, this is going to sort of kind of be a recap of what Philip mentioned earlier because, he definitely brought up some really, really good points during the interview. So I want to, again, we're talking to our millennials because I'm trying to inspire them to have some appreciation for people who are kind of, you know, who kind of set this thing up for them, who walk this path, whose shoulders they rest on. They seem to lack respect in that area. So I agree with what you guys mentioned earlier. But I want to ask you a two-part question. One, do you plan to use, I know it wouldn't be titled the Cassette Tape Chronicles. I don't know if it would be the Gaming Chronicles or whatever. But do you plan to use your media and or your social media to show us like some behind the scenes so people can have even more of an appreciation for what it is that you're bringing to the industry, that particular industry?
Absolutely. Again, we have like two divisions of content developing we're doing with the UGL. on one dimension, it's like, you know, think ESPN. You know, we're going to really give you the stats, you know, year-round to these incredible players doing all these tournaments every year. And then on the other side, we're going to show you behind the curtain what these people's lifestyles are like. So, for example, we have, you know, this kind of Bay Area slogan we're saying is basically saying from 6ix9ine Village to Larkspur, which is basically we have one particular player profile we did on this guy. His name is none other than John Madden. Not the actual, you know, the OG, you know, pioneer of the game, but this young man was really born on his birth certificate, John Madden. And he comes from East Oakland. Versus he's like a heavy competitor in our game league. He's like, you know, one of the top five for sure. And then all of a sudden we also have this guy by the name of Tom Baum. And he's in the city known as Larkspur, California, here in the Bay Area. Look it up. It's, you know, it ain't no cheap place to stay. You feel me? And so it's just a unique opportunity that this gaming culture has created that no matter what walk of life you come from, if you come from having $10 or having $1 million, we all love to play these games, and we love to compete and win. And so that's just been a big thing about our process.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I want to just one or two more questions before we wrap. And I want to bring in Philip on this last question. But more insidious than that, as it relates to the lexicon of your work, I want to talk about a few things there because I can't, again, digest the fact that there is such a huge divide between our young adults, not to pick on them at all, but the fact that they don't understand a lot of the, I guess because things are so easy due to technology, right? So when you don't really necessarily have to work for something, there's less appreciation there. So I just want to ask you and Philip, how do you think we could use our social media to properly present what it is that we're doing, but also show the appreciation for the people who helped us get here? I mean, meaning, you know, the old heads or just whomever, you fill in the blank the way that you want. But what do you think we need to do via our media and or our social media to bridge that gap? And that question is for you and Philo.
Is he there?
Hey, go ahead, brother. You a guest. You go first.
Okay. Keep it real. I do as much as I can, I guess, through my journey with Facebook and Instagram. But keep it real. I've learned for whatever reason, for my audience, I have a larger audience, so to speak, on my Facebook versus the Instagram is kind of that live it out with them everyday experience. I have to admit, I have to kind of really get myself back into the, keep it real, the space of wanting to be in the public domain like that every day, every week. You know what I mean? That's just not my particular interest every week, to be honest, no more. I think I lived that out when I was a younger dude. But for the bigger picture of whether it's promoting, you know, community activism or even to do business, I know I have to go ahead and be a part of this, you know, social media era. And so, again, if it's, again, to have conversations about generational wealth or to discuss, you know, gentrification or whatever, you want to deal with police brutality, you know, you got to kind of meet them youngsters where they at and the platform they at. And then sometimes, you know, I go to my Facebook and I have a certain, I guess you could say, an older audience that I have a, we kind of on the same platform. But what's dope about now, what I'm grateful to be living through, is that now the hip-hop is such an older culture. We as, you know, now grandfathers and grandmothers and everything, it's like they didn't grow up to, you know, get grown and old, but they still know a good song. They still know the rhyme to some old school songs that maybe their kids don't realize that they know. And so from that experience, man, it's just about being out here with it. I know you guys have been, you know, discussing to be out there more on your platforms, and I think, you know, it's just time to have our thing consistent and give them something to watch.
Good.
And the piggyback on what he said, to answer the same question, I think for us, for the generation we come from, it was a more private generation. We didn't have the Instagrams, the Facebook. So for us to be able to connect with the youngsters, we have to open up, not be so private, but use our social media and show them exactly what it could be used for. Nowadays, social media is the new currency. So a lot of the millennials know how to use Instagram, how to build followers, how to get popping on Instagram, on these social platforms, but don't know how to actually get money like a business, use it to do ads properly. So it's the other ways to use it more so than just using it for the negative like most of them use it for. Now, I'm not saying it's everyone. You do have some YouTubers, young YouTubers. You have some young people out there on Instagram who use it the right way, but it's a lot of negativity with it. So for us, I believe if we open up, to these platforms, open up to the fact that it is now 2019, and these platforms are popping. So more people are more susceptible to do business with you in a DM or in an instant message than they are to pick up the phone with you or through email. So it's a lot of people not talking no more. Conversations are not being had because it is with social media. So that's just what I think, man, how we can bridge the gap. It's just open up more, use the social media, show them, and be more hands-on and pretty much lead by example. Practice what you preach. And I think that'll get us a long way with the millennials.
Yeah, definitely that. So, Mr. Johnson, we introduced a lot, which is why we've got to. It's almost mandatory that we do a part two because there's so much to unpack as it relates to your resume. But what do you want people to take away from today's interview, being that we had so much, you know, that we could prey upon, during our discussions today? But what's the underlying message that you want them to remember about you?
I just would like to be, again, a part of preserving culture. I think a lot of times, you know, with the way things change, they forget what started things, and I want to be a preserver. Also want to, again, even with that statement, I was back and forth with a shout-out to Uncle Luke in Miami in our conversation with Phil. We mentioned Luke, but I had a unique conversation with him on Facebook, and we were basically discussing gentrification and how things are parallel in Miami that's happening here in Oakland and probably in Nashville.
So
with that being said, I just want to be a part of that kind of conversation with the culture today. But then also on the flip side, I still kick it. I still have fun. You know, me and Phil may figure out ways artists, you know, to the Bay versus artists to the South. So we're about, you know, having fun and impacting culture that way. But then we also want to have a certain relationship with these youngsters, because one of the biggest issues we got here in Oakland is that the nightclubs is going to get shut down because of their patrons sometimes may have friends that didn't get in. So, you know, they have a certain attitude outside and tear stuff and, you know, now the police is basically cutting down, you know, permits. And so we just want to think about those kind of things with this new culture, because, again, I keep it real. I come from straight the death row time period. You know, we used to do everything. But at that time, you know, I still had OGs around me, or uncles and OG partners who would be like, dog, you know, you ain't supposed to be doing that in the streets. Even though they let me do what I'm going to do, but it was like it was a certain cloth of respect. And I feel like the youngsters need to get back to that vibe, because, again, one day they're going to be old. So, again, that's just one of those things that I want to be remembered to have had that type of impact on the culture. I mean, all the rappers around here, keep it real with you, will tell you that's just been my thing. I always be about, you know, trying to get positivity going with the artist community. Because, you know, sometimes everybody have big egos and feel like they should have been in this slot on the radio, or they should have been on this slot at the concert. And, you know, you got to be show some diplomatic diplomacy with them.
you know. And so that's just what I am out here. They call me sometimes, you know, the hip hop mayor. I don't really be, you know, throwing it around like that. But if it's gonna be truly said today, that's what I've been called.
Yeah, and I feel that. I really feel that because I have coming into this thing two strikes against me. One being a female, the other being a black female, and quite often, you know, we don't get a chance to express our authenticity. We have to be a version of something because it's accepted, you know. And so what I'm trying to do, I'm very careful right now, I'm trying not to lose myself in all of this as you're trying to give a voice to something. And you also want to make sure that you stand for something and you represent something, you know, because it was a really big deal for me a long time ago when my mama used to tell me, you go outside, you're representing me. You know what I mean? And so that still means something to me. So I'm trying to make sure that I don't lose myself in all of this myth because it is such a competitive world and people competitive nature, that spirit is just so high. It's so easy to forget, you know, why you're here. Because you're doing things that, you know, just to pretty much keep up at this point. You know what I'm saying? If you want to survive, there's a certain whatever. But I keep reminding myself, the saddest thing I've ever seen was an old man in the club, you know, with a toupee on in a sea full of 20-year-olds, you know what I'm saying, trying to rock out to 20-year-old music, knowing he doesn't have the appreciation for or shouldn't even have his ass in the club anyway. To be home, but he's saying, no, I'm not going to let go of this hair, this hairline, you know, this, none of that. I'm going to be me, and it just stands out. So I don't want to be that, but I also don't want to lose what he's fighting for by showing up at that club every week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a give and take, because maybe you're talking about the dude who in his second childhood type OG versus OG who's still kind of seasoned to the culture, and he's just there for the culture, not necessarily trying to catch every girl. Because keep it real, I'm always asked to go to to sometimes young events. I'm 44, man, and I'm proud of that. And the point is every time I go to the club, most times it's about preserving the culture side of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to the club owner. I'm still talking to the DJs. I'm conversing with the artists. It's not necessarily just the OG in the you know, hot burgundy suit trying to, you know, pick me up something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally get it. So we're going to do what we can, like Philip said, to bridge the gap and try and bring West Coast and the South together. I'm going to put somebody on the spot, 650-273, 650-273. I don't know if you're in a position to talk or not, but welcome, BT Media, a.k.a. Jeff Kwan, to the show. Your mic is live. How are you today? Jeff Kwan,
650-273. Yeah, I'm here.
I have goals to bring nothing but solutions to the forefront. Well, what do you suggest? You heard the interview. You've been here since the beginning. What do you suggest that we need to do, one, to speak to our young people, but also to bring, you know, East Coast, West Coast, bring it together? What do we need to do to share our things that we're doing, or, you know, more of our current culture? What are you doing? Let's start there. What are you doing?
As far as what, like interviews or something like that?
No. Like, are there any tactics, just social media? What are you doing, you know, via your advertising or marketing to make sure that, you know, people in the South get your information, and so that you can introduce more people? Here's a better way for me to put it. One of your ways, in my opinion, that you're doing this, is, you know that I'm on the East Coast, and you're always sending me people from the Bay Area. And I love you for that, because to me it's like you're paying tribute to them because you believe in them so much. And so I'm promoting it over here real heavy on the East Coast, so the East Coast get exposed to, not that they didn't know, but, you know, for those who may not have or don't know what people are up to currently, that's like one of the methods that you're doing it. In my opinion, even if you know it or not, to me it's like we're swapping culture. You know what I'm saying?
First
I don't know
all,
if you did that on purpose.
No. First of all, you have to have your home base first. You got to know your area.
Gotcha.
Because if you're on social media, it's good to follow like all these big people, but you have to follow your area first. That's where you grew up in. You know everyone around it. Then you start falling out. Go to the west. Go to the east. Go to the south. Whatever you gotta do. That's what I do. I try to reach out to these people. Especially further away is better. But some people
yeah.
in your area will not want to link up with you because, you know, they look at you like, well, who are you? If you reach out to someone like I reached out to people right in L.A. on a different show I work with. He used to say, yeah, I'll do an interview with you guys because it's someone outside your area. And I listened to this interview that day. I listened to the interview. It's pretty dope, you know. So he goes, you want to do an interview? He goes, yeah. Very easy to do that. You just got to reach out. That's how you break.
Right.
The West and East together.
Well, again, I want to give you mad props because whenever you send a text message, you always say, like, oh, man, he's doing a lot. He's doing really big things in the area, blah, blah, blah. So that's what I'm saying. They need to know they got a no-limit
no
soldier
doubt.
Over
no
there
doubt,
working.
Man. Shout out to Jerry, man.
No yes.
doubt, man. He one of those dope hidden jewels, so to speak, of the
yes,
culture. He always giving us some new facts or is introducing us to a different part of the culture. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? So shout out
exactly.
to him for even reaching out to me and bringing me on this platform.
Yes, definitely that. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you so much.
I do it from the heart. You know, I do it from the heart because
uh-huh.
I think hip hop is in my blood. You know, and hip hop is not just one culture. It's everyone's culture. But people look at it like, well, you know, it's a black thing, or it's an Asian thing, or a white thing. It's not. It's all everyone. If you look at all the
mm-hmm.
cultures that love hip-hop, it's worldwide. It's huge, you know. And inside my blood is hip-hop, like 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
All the time. So.
Well, I still think you're being modest, and like I said, the one thing I can truly appreciate you is the thing that I think a lot of a lot of our genres are missing right now, and that's a love for. I think a lot of people are doing it for clout. A lot of people are doing it for money. A lot of people are doing it just because somebody, you know what I'm saying, somebody said, oh, you were good
yeah.
or whatever, and they really don't have that love and appreciation for it because the things that they won't do is to study the history of it, you know what I mean, or study
yeah.
different facets of it, you know, to make it even bigger so that they could use their skill set, you know, on multiple levels. And so I think that's what we miss as it relates to some, I won't say all of the millennials, because some of them do pay homage to, you know, the old hip heads or, you know, just other genres as well. But, yeah, one thing I see that we're missing is that people just don't really get it per se. Do you know what I mean? Don't really get, you gotta love something. When you love something, it just shows. So that when a Jeff texts,
like,
you can hear the energy, you can see the exclamation marks, like, you gotta put this guy on your show because he is so awesome. You know?
Well, yeah, it's like what you just said, right? Like, you gotta pay homage. So,
yeah.
You're a producer, sample someone's music from, like, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. There's a reason why you sample it. It's not just because, oh, I just got to sample this. And you got to look back and say, you know, how was this song created? What kind of effect was it back when the song came out? Then you start making
yeah.
beats that are sampled. That's how you do that. Some people don't do that. They just sample it. They don't even know who the person is. Like, a good thing is, example, I got 5 on it. The original is Club Nouveau. If you ask someone from 2000s, they're going to say, I got 5 on it. They don't know the history behind that one song. And Puffy sampled it in the 2000s. You know, that's just a
mm-hmm.
good example right there. That they don't look into their research. They don't look into history. They don't look into any of that. It's kind of sad, really sad.
Yeah, it is really sad. It definitely is that. Well, I appreciate you guys so much. Go on again, Mr. Johnson. Go on and shout out your social media information. And Jeff, while we've got you, I definitely want you to shout out your website and the links and dates and time of your show. So, Mr. Johnson, we'll start with you. Give us your information again.
Again, this is a dope conversation. You can find me on my Instagram at Chuckster115, and then you can also learn more about our e-gaming tournaments at UGLworld.com and on Instagram, UGLworld.
Thank you. All right, Jeff?
Okay, my Instagram is BTP Media Group. My email is btpmediagroup@gmail.com. And then the website I work off is bayliferadio.com. Those are my social media.
Thank you. All right, and I was going down the board trying to see if there were numbers I recognize. I do recognize Ali. Ali, Ali is in the building. I recognize Lambert Davis and also I think 202. I think that's LA. The others, not that I am not acknowledging you, it's just I don't know numbers by heart, so I apologize if you're hanging out and I didn't shout out your name. So, Philip, you're all over social media, and yeah, you're pretty active on Instagram. So can you go on and give us your information so we know how to reach you? And I think that'll be it. We're going to get out of here and give you guys back your day.
Well, mine is plain and simple. Philo the Great on everything. That's PH like phone. ELOTHEGREAT. Get with it or quit it, barbecue me or do something, will something, want something, do something, don't. Hey, you got two choices, either check it or respect it. Valerie.
Yeah, definitely. And I am Valerie Denise Jones, website ValerieDeniseJones.com, at Valerie Denise on Twitter. So please make sure you join us on social media, because the only way that this thing is going to work is if we continue the conversation on the other side. We have to do that. Outside of that, then we're just having a conversation, a big old conference call. So if we don't share the link, then who's going to know what we talked about? So that's so important. 929-477-1167, 929-477-1167 is the number to call Tuesdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we are joined by Judge Joe Brown. Judge Joe Brown, you guys remember him from his TV show. I think this weekend we've got Tariq Nasheed in the building. Last week we had a very, very interesting conversation, and you can definitely find that on my YouTube channel, Valerie Denise Jones. Mr. Johnson, you got to follow me on Twitter and YouTube so I can reciprocate the energy. I think I followed you today on YouTube, but I got to find you on all those other platforms so I can make sure that I track you. I am getting ready to play that clip again because I like the interview betwixt you and Be Legit. I only have 2 minutes of it, but
the racial divide over what is and what isn't good hip-hop did not begin with Lil Xan's controversial thoughts on Tupac.
It's boring music.
Or when Joe Budden went off on Lil Yachty.
We don't like what he represents.
Or even in 2008 when Ice-T beefed with Soulja Boy.
Fuck Soulja Boy. Eat a dick. This nigga single-handedly killed hip-hop.
Every generation of fans has its
always
own thoughts.
Always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts.
Please share your comments on our Facebook page or websites.